Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th of December, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to bring you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. You may be wondering where Dave is. He is, of course, one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Midwest, which is about 40 degrees, 50 degrees warmer than we are, so we are all envious and a bit jealous. Well, the Federal Communications Commission voted on Thursday to repeal Obama-era net neutrality rules, which required Internet service providers to offer equal access to all web content without charging consumers for higher quality delivery or giving preferential treatment to certain websites. The vote is a big win for Ajit Pai, the agency's chairman, who has long opposed the regulations, saying they impeded innovation. Whiny little snowflake. He once said that they were based on hypothetical harms and hysterical prophecies of doom. The original rules went into effect in 2015 and laid out a regulatory plan that addressed a rapidly changing internet. Under those regulations, broadband service was considered a utility under Title II of the Communications Act, giving the FCC broad power over internet providers. The rules prohibited the following practices: blocking internet service providers. Blocking. Internet service providers could not discriminate against any lawful content by blocking websites or apps. Throttling. Service providers could not slow the transmission of data based on the nature of the content as long as it is legal. And paid prioritization. Service providers could not create an internet fast lane for companies and consumers who pay premiums and a slow lane for those who didn't. Those blocking, throttling, and paid prioritization rules are out the window. Now, many consumer advocates have argued that if the rules get scrapped, broadband providers will begin selling the internet in bundles, not unlike how cable television is sold today. Want to access Facebook and Twitter? Under a bundling system, getting onto those sites could require paying a premium social media package, for example. In some countries, internet bundling is already happening. In October, Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat of California, posted a screenshot on Twitter from a Portuguese mobile carrier that showed subscription plans with names like messaging, social, and video. He wrote that providers were starting to split the net. Another major, Portugal is not the only country doing that. Another major concern is that consumers could suffer from pay-to-play deals. Without rules prohibiting paid prioritization, a fast lane could be occupied by big internet and media companies, as well as affluent households, while everyone else would be left on the slow lane. Some small business owners have also been concerned these issues will affect them, worrying that industry giants could pay to get an edge and leave them on an unfair playing field. But the fight is not over, as many have pointed out, given that there are a number of ways the FCC's decision could be challenged in Congress and in the courts. The Congressional Review Act, which allows lawmakers to reverse newly instituted regulations, for example. Mike Doyle, Democrat of Pennsylvania, has vowed to do just that. This option, however, requires bipartisan support, so it's unlikely to get traction in a Republican-controlled Congress. Another option would be to rewrite the classification of broadband in Title II of the 1996 Telecommunications Act. The upside is that this would end the debate once and for all, according to many people. The issue is that even if a bipartisan bill is passed, it would need Trump's signature. The American Civil Liberties Union, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and 19 state attorneys general, including New York's own Eric Schneiderman, have vowed to fight this, even to suing the government. We'll see. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is net neutrality was repealed. Your choices are finally freedom. This is very bad for the internet. Meh. And I'm happy to pay and pay. So far, we've got 31 people who believe that, in fact, this is very bad for the internet. 61% of them do. One person happy to pay. Three people happy to pay and pay. Well, good for them. I have a bridge. I'd like to sell them shares.
We have a donate button we'd like you to see.
Exactly. and people don't even do that. You know, we imagine if you had to pay to watch sound bites, to listen to sound bites. Ah, well. And I know there will be many of you have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right side of our homepage there, you will find that under Fascinating Stuff, there are the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. The first item so far, at least on the poll discussion, is 16 December 17, net neutrality was repealed, and we're having a little bit of a thing going on there, so that's kind of lovely. And, of course, you can join us by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Some of Pi's comments were just atrocious, you know, I think. He responded to that Portuguese...
Some,
yeah. Well, yeah, okay. He responded to that Portuguese telco. Telco is the name of the company.
Yeah.
Internet that shows the, you know, you want to pay more. You pay more for YouTube. You pay more for Pandora. You know, depending on what website you want to go to, you pay more. And Pi said, well, that's good for customers because then they can decide what they want to pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then he specifically called out Cher, Alyssa Milano, George Takei, and Kamali Nanjiani for, what did he call it? Well, the Ars Technica was ginning up support.
Right.
That was their fear-mongering and hysteria. You know, the Hollywood actors are causing the problem. It's not really a problem. It's just them making it sound bad.
Right.
Speaking of acting, he did a good acting job on a few sketches.
Yeah, he did some videos, which some people loved, and a number of people found incredibly demeaning. But I guess everybody gets a choice.
One of the big things he had said is that because the Title II was implemented, internet providers have stopped building out their infrastructure.
This is, of course, an utter and complete lie.
Utter and complete lie. There was an article on one of the websites that went through point by point. It was either John Oliver or Stephen Colbert that brought out a conference call from Verizon shareholders, where the CEO of Verizon is legally obligated to tell the truth, said that, this Title II thing hasn't changed us any. We're still going to spend $1 billion on infrastructure.
Yep.
And so everything that he claimed was wrong. So we're making the internet free for providers to overcharge you, and that's what I thought, because his name for the ruling is the Internet Freedom Act.
Right.
You know, everyone wants to have the internet be free, right? No, it's free for internet providers to screw you.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things we're finding already, and this is the ink's hardly dry. Comcast had a page on its website that talked about how they would never ever do any bad things if net neutrality was repealed. Yep. That page is now gone. that page is gone. So
the same day the FCC vote.
Yep. There was somebody sitting in a room with a finger over a button just waiting for that ruling to pass so they could remove that page.
And that's what Pi said, is the internet providers would voluntarily police themselves. And as long as they publicly disclose how they're screwing you, that's okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so they put it on a website somewhere that we're going to charge you extra for Facebook. That's perfectly fine.
Right. Just like, you know, people get to voluntarily, pharmaceutical companies get to voluntarily charge us $700 for the same drugs they sell in other countries for $35. Same drugs from the same plants, packaged by the same people. Different. And so that's what's happened. We'll see what that means over time, but it certainly is likely that if your internet service provider is also a provider of content,
which most of them are,
then it is very likely you will either need to pay more to access content that is not belonging to your internet service provider, i.e. Netflix, YouTube, etc., or they will slow it down so it becomes unbearably unusable. Just one more reason I'm very happy to have Greenlight.
Yeah.
They do internet service, and that's all they do.
So if you are a fiber installer technician, you know how to lay fiber, call Greenlight. They'll give you a job because they want to run out faster than they can currently. From what we've seen, they're booked up for the next couple of years. You can go to the Greenlight Network's website and sign up your interest. You don't have to pay anything yet. You're just signing up your interest to get your neighborhood. And if you're sitting on any town boards, please give them authorization to run wires in your town.
Exactly.
Yeah. And from Stop the Cap, we had some very conflicting news from Spectrum, the local ISP here in Rochester. They are increasing... The cable company. If you have Spectrum Internet, they are increasing your speed from 60 to 100. And if you're paying for 100, you're getting, they'll increase it to 300. So now they're catching up to the low end of Greenlight.
Right.
But that's only for Spectrum Internet. If you have Time Warner Internet, you're still stuck at 20.
Right.
So switch to Spectrum Internet as soon as you can.
Well, and if you do that, of course, whatever deals you had with Time Warner are done. And whatever you were paying at Time Warner doesn't count anymore.
But you may get a better deal at Spectrum. That's what I switched and dropped my bill $50. But the bad news from Spectrum is starting. Second good news from Spectrum is starting next month. Some of the channels that we lost with the Sinclair Media lawsuit, Comedy Central and Science Channel, there are two of them that I watch. They are coming down into the standard cable package. So you won't have to pay it. So right now, you have to pay extra for Digital Tier 2 to get Comedy Central and Science Channel. Of the 100 channels on Tier 2, those are the only two I watch.
Right.
Excuse me. So that was two good things. The bad thing is they're going to start scrambling basic cable. So if you do not have a cable box on a television, you're just using straight coax into your TV, you are now going to have to rent a cable box for $6 a month to get a basic cable, channels under 100. Many people already have these boxes. They're calling them digital adapters or digital converters. And you may not know you're paying $6 a month in rent. We are looking for...
It's because people don't look at their bills.
Don't look at their bills. You complain and you grumble how high it is, but you don't look at the line items. And so we are looking for alternatives where you can buy your own adapter, like we did with cable modems. That's the other thing with Spectrum Internet. They don't charge you rent for the modem, but they do charge you rent for the wireless. So with Time Warner, you charge you're paying rent on the modem and the wireless, so you can buy your own modem. Now buy your own wireless router and stop paying rent for that. So we're looking for a way to put your own cable your own digital adapter in, so it can descramble. But from what I can tell, even if you buy your own digital adapter, instead of paying the $6 a month, you're going to have to pay the $4 a month for a cable card,
right,
to descramble Spectrum's own signal. So you save a little bit of money, but it's very frustrating. So a lot of people have had just straight cable in the second, third, fourth TVs. The TV in the bedroom you watch the morning news on.
Right.
So now you're going to have to get an antenna,
right?
Or pay $6 a month for.
I've got a cable-ready TV. Yeah, and.
That
doesn't matter anymore.
For those of us old enough, we remember the early days when you didn't have a cable-ready TV. You just had the antenna. In fact, not even the F connector. You had two little wires.
Right.
And so your cable box had to convert those two little wires. And then TV manufacturers started putting cable tuners in them. And so the cable companies have now started scrambling the channel, so you still have to get their box.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And Steve did have something else to say about.
Yeah, so Spectrum, if you are a Spectrum internet customer in Rochester, the new speeds may not take effect until you reboot your modem. So you may have to unplug it, wait a minute, and plug it back in so you get the new speeds. And if you happen to be a Cox customer, they're bigger on the West Coast, but the podcast listeners might be on the West Coast.
That's right.
Cox is giving you a happy holiday rate increase effective January 7th. Almost all their packages will increase in some way or another, except the Playboy channel. That's going to decrease.
Well, there you go.
So I guess that's
Honey,
one way to commiserate.
Save some money.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll save some money on the cable bill, huh?
yeah, it's going to be interesting the next year or so.
Yeah, and also on Stop the Cap, Phil Dampier does a marvelous job with StopTheCap.com.
StopTheCap.com, yeah.
They have a chart from Charter Communications, which is now Spectrum, I'm guessing from one of their quarterly reports, saying that in the last 10 years, the price per megabit of internet bandwidth has decreased 93%.
Their cost. Not what you're paying.
Right. What you're paying has increased significantly.
Right.
Their cost has decreased.
Right. Lovely. And this comes. One thing we are discovering is that the best place to get any information about a company is from their SEC filings, Securities and Exchange Commission.
Where they legally are obligated to tell the truth.
Yes. They are legally obligated to tell the truth, and they are legally obligated to disclose everything.
Yep.
So there's the place where you find out, oh, yeah, our costs have decreased 97% and our charges have increased 143%.
Which is really good for their stock price.
It's really good for the stock price. And like we said, it's all about the shareholder. When you are a publicly traded company, the only important thing is maximizing shareholder profit. That's business 101. And so they do that, and if they do it at the expense of you, nobody cares because you're not a shareholder. If you are, you've got one share, and the hell with you.
Yep, and your name is.
I like that company. I think it's OneShare.com, where you can buy one share of a company that you like, and it will come in a nice big framed, you know, fancy certificate. And then because you're a shareholder, you can go to the shareholders' meetings.
That's right.
And you can vote. Doesn't say how many shares you have. I've got one share.
Right. So we'll see. It's going to be a fairly long row. We are, after all, in early days as far as that stuff is concerned. But we'll see where it takes us, and we'll see what we end up with. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Brent from Fairport, New York. Hi, Brent. What's up?
Hi, guys. I haven't called in about 25 years, so I figure I'm at the head of the line again.
Well, all right. We'll let you through this time.
Okay, I got a friend who was using, she's a person in their 90s, and they were using an old Vista, and they really got hung up, you know, software didn't play well together. All they want to do is email. And I suggested that they look at the, you know, get a Chromebook. And but somebody else took them to a big box store, and they came back with a Windows machine. It's a Lenovo. And it's a pretty good seller on processor, but 2 gigabytes of RAM and 32 gigabytes of solid state.
Yeah.
And the thing won't do the updates anymore.
Nope.
It just says it needs 8 gigabytes free. There's about 24 gigabytes already used. They have no programs, no data, no video on this machine at all. And I've been through the disk cleanup system, and, you know, the most it'll clean off is 28 megabytes, which won't do it at all. But then when I do the system, it says window update cleanup 3.99 TB. I assume that means terabytes.
Really?
And so you know, there's not enough free memory, and I can't figure out any way to free it up. So it won't. I tell you, when the machine came, it had a, you know, system or build that was at least a year old on it. So now we're looking at the fall update, and it just won't do it.
Yeah, whoever helped her buy that machine did her an extreme disservice. It's nice to be able to say, oh, look at all the money I saved. But 2 gig is just barely enough to run Windows.
And no other programs.
Right, exactly. And 32 gig is pitiful, quite frankly, for a hard drive.
Does she have any data on the computer she needs? Do you know?
On this machine, yeah. Her own data?
Yeah.
There are no data files. There's no Office programs installed or anything like that.
One thing you could do is download the Windows 10 installer on your machine and put it on the flash drive, and then erase her machine and install from scratch.
Okay. Now, I know Microsoft on their website kind of addresses this problem, and they've got a download helper of some kind.
Yeah.
But, it's not my machine, and I don't want to brick this machine because I think taking it to a professional would cost more than the whole thing cost anyway.
Yeah.
It likely will, but I think what Steve has suggested makes sense because if you do brick the machine, you've still got that update on the thumb drive, and you can do another reinstall.
Right, and you want to find the Windows 10 ISO file. I'll post another link on our website.
Okay.
We've had it a few times, and that's the full installer disk like you used to get in the box. That will install on an empty hard drive.
Okay, and you think the license key is in the BIOS of this machine?
With Windows 10, it's what Windows did it come with originally?
Well, it has 10 on.
It has.
Oh no, this is the new one. Windows 10. Yeah.
Yeah. The Windows license is handled weirdly now. It's not a physical key anymore. It's an OEM thing that's part of the hardware.
Okay.
Okay, it should work without a problem.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
But you should be aware that theoretically sometime this coming year, Microsoft will start charging rent to run Windows.
Yeah, right.
That's the other thing. Download Neverware and install. Make it a Chromebook.
Well, exactly. You could do that very easily, and I was gonna suggest that is a possibility. 32 gig and 2 gig is enough to run Neverware.
Yeah, but, okay.
But... you know, that it depends what is her email system.
Well, she wants to use Gmail.
Perfect.
So, you know, that part was a fit. But, her old machine was a Vista. It stopped playing with Yahoo and the browsers that you could have on that machine.
See, of course.
But, as you know, this is a real pain. I think what you're saying is the machine is just too small for this.
It's way underpowered.
But if all you want is email, that's fine. Just never bother upgrading it.
Well, you just can't upgrade it. That's the big thing.
And then you have all the security violations.
Here's the deal. Everybody listening should hear this. 4 gig of RAM really should be the minimum for running Windows.
And 8 is better.
And 8 is better, and a minimum 64 gig hard drive. And when I say minimum, I ain't kidding.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's without a lot of anything else. If you want to run an office suite and you want to put documents on it, you want to store pictures on it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you might as well just get a terabyte drive and be done.
Right, I agree. I agree, but I didn't have a chance. So
I get it. But whoever, if the person who helped her buy that machine is listening, you did that woman a severe disservice. Never, ever help anyone again.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's something to be said for saving money, but you have to look at the future. So her alternative is to just go buy a new machine. Now she's outgrown this one, go buy a new one.
Well, right.
And if you spend a little bit more up front, then you can grow with the machine.
Right, but as Brent says, she doesn't really need anything more than a Chromebook, which ironically would have cost her $150 or $200.
Yep.
For the whole thing, and then it would upgrade itself automatically. She never had to think about it again. She wants to do Gmail, so that's a done deal. She can go to any website she wants to. She can listen to streaming music or put music on a thumb drive, or rather an SD card, and throw it in her machine. I mean, there's just a million things you can do with a Chromebook. Pretty much anything you want to do. I've been doing audio editing. I've been doing video editing on a Chromebook. Yes. It'll do everything. It's a different way of working, and so people are afraid of it, you know? And fear makes people do weird things, like buy them another Windows machine,
yeah.
You know? But
she might even like a tablet.
She might be able to use a tablet. Why yeah. not? If it's just for... That's an alternative. Brent's still listening, of course, and that is an interesting alternative. For a couple $100, you can get a decent tablet. With the, you know, you get an Android tablet, which is less expensive.
Does Chrome make tablets?
Chrome does not, but Android.
Android is new. Android and Chrome are what,
getting closer.
Kissing cousins,
right? but you could buy a tablet and run the Gmail app, and you're done. You know, you're done to do everything she wants to do. Plus, of course, you can still surf the web and listen to music and do all of those things. You just don't get a keyboard. And at her age, that could be important.
Mm-hmm.
But so maybe not. But you know, that's the one of the beauties of a Chromebook. And there are Chromebooks for a couple of $100, and there are Chromebooks for $1,000. So
I was reading a review of the best Chromebooks for 2017, and their pick was the Google Pixel.
Sure.
For $999.
$999.
That's the best of the Chromebooks.
It is that.
But no one wants to pay that much.
Well, people don't, no.
Yeah.
It's like the Pixel 2 phone. Amazing yep. phone, also $900. People are scoffing at Apple. And if you're not willing to give Apple $1,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are you willing to give $1,000 to?
Here's an Asus Chromebook for $179, but 16 gigs of RAM, of storage.
Well, but in this particular case, you don't need more,
yeah.
right? Because the updates happen automatically, and 16 gig is more than enough for that.
And it probably
She's only doing email, which is out on the web anyway.
Yeah. And it probably has an SD slot for adding more storage.
And it has an SD slot. So because of the way a Chromebook works, not only in terms of where data are stored, but the way it updates, you can't, in a 32 gig system, download the fall update,
which is 4 gigs by itself.
Which is 4 gigs all by itself.
So you need, and that's why the Brent, it said it probably needed 8 gigs.
Right.
It's 4 gigs for the download and 4 gigs of working space.
Right.
And then it deletes the Windows will keep the download in case you need to reinstall
exactly
it again.
Right.
And so suddenly your drive is full.
But in Linux, Chromebooks do it a completely different way, and so the storage on the disk is separate from the storage of the operating system, and even for updates. And, of course, updates happen in the background, so as long as you're online, it doesn't even, you know, you don't even know it's happening, and then next time you reboot, boom, you got a new operating system. You don't even have to do anything. For somebody like a 90-year-old who just wants to do Gmail, it's very hard to beat a Chromebook. Particularly for $179, which is all you're going to need. Is it going to be a little slow? Yes. On the other hand, you're 90. You know, this was a $250 Chromebook, and it's fast enough for everything I want to do. You know, it's fast enough for everything. Like I said, I can edit video on this. For $250? Yes, please. Can I edit it faster on a $1,000 Pixel? Sure, probably.
Yep.
So what?
I
saved $750.
Yeah. I read an interview on some magazine. I wish I could remember where I read stuff, but that's cool. They were asking a 100-year-old woman what the biggest technological innovation of her life was, you know, over the last 100 years, and they're thinking, the car, the right. airplane, the computer, and her answer was the mop. For generations, women were on their hands and knees scrubbing floors. Somebody invented the mop by putting a handle on a brush
yep.
and saved all those knees.
Yep, yep. Very smart, very smart.
Yep.
So at any rate, if you're looking, we should probably talk for a moment at least about last-minute Christmas gifts. People need last-minute Christmas gifts. Let's talk about the gift of backup.
Yes.
Everybody needs backup, everybody. So buy somebody a stocking stuffer of a thumb drive or an SD card. Two or three of those, 64 gig, 128 gig, they aren't expensive right now. Throw one of those in a stocking. Throw one of those in everybody's stocking. If you're a big spender, you can spend, what, $60 a year for carbonite? Yeah.
Give them their first year.
Give them their first year for free. Here it is, a year of carbonite. You get backed up to the cloud. It's only $60. What a great gift. What an absolutely great gift. And not only will they thank you on Christmas Day, but 8 months from now when their 2-gig, 32-gig yep. Lenovo laptop dies, they'll thank you a lot.
We still get customers that come into the store with a dead hard drive and say, well, why did it break? Things break. It's a spinning mechanical thing. Well, I've never had it break before.
That's right.
Congratulations. It broke now.
Right.
Or this was my backup drive, so I deleted it from my main drive. Then it's not a backup copy anymore. If it's your only copy, it's not a backup.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So we'll see.
So Backblaze has a which is another one of the inexpensive personal cloud backup, 400 million gigabytes backed up. That's 400 petabytes.
Yeah, it really is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I'm still waiting for that Dave Enright.
Yeah, right. And you had one other statistic about Backblaze before we go to the phones?
Yeah, so Backblaze has said they've backed up 400 million gigabytes, 400 petabytes. But more importantly, they have recovered 25 billion files and counting, which I think is this number here, 27,042,766,000.
27 billion,
billion
with a B,
so
files.
27 billion files have been recovered where people lost something on their hard drive. There are two kinds of people, people whose hard drives have failed and people whose hard drives will fail.
Right.
So you will fail. You will lose your data. Will you cry if you lose your data? Will your wife kill you if you lose the baby pictures?
Well, I've said this before. It breaks my heart every time a student comes to me and says, my thumb drive died. It's the only copy of my thesis. Can you get it back for me? And I have to say to them, I can either spend 4 days of my own time, because it's not my job, getting these data back for you, or you could have spent $5 on a backup thumb drive.
Yep.
Why is this on me now?
Which they have at the school bookstore.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Gates, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi. I want to point out about the Chromebook.
Yeah.
Can you put CC Cleaner on the Chromebook?
No, and that's okay because you don't need to. CC Cleaner is designed specifically to clean Windows computers.
Oh.
But CCleaner doesn't do, it doesn't do anything on a Chromebook.
Those types of problems just don't occur on a Chromebook that you would need something like that for.
Okay, well, I just want to find out.
Yep.
I got one, and I didn't know what on the Google Store you can download it, and I just wanted to make sure I'm not putting something on that I can't use.
Right. You can download it through the Google Play Store, but it's really for Android machines, which do require CCleaner and a couple of other programs like it. But while you can install and run it on a Chromebook, it doesn't really do a lot because there's not a lot for it to do.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
have
Mike.
Happy holiday.
You too. Have a great one.
And we're also seeing that the incidences of traditional viruses are on a downturn, and the more common thing today is fake ads and fake tech support. So you're on a website and a message pops up and says you've got a virus and you should call this phone number. Never call that phone number. Never let them into your computer.
Right.
I get them, and one of the things I do, I get on my iPad all the time, and they will spawn 100 windows, so you can't just hit the back button to get back to where you were, because it's already gone away 100 times. You have to close that window and maybe even close the whole browser to get out of it.
Right, and if you are, and that's another thing about a Chromebook. If somebody says, I work for Microsoft, there's something wrong with your computer, you can laugh at them because your computer doesn't have any Microsoft thing on it anywhere.
Some of the fake ones are also now saying Apple. It's all only a matter of time before they say Google.
That's true.
Microsoft tech, yes, but I'm on a Linux.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and we have people, some of our Mac customers that will... Because they're running Microsoft Office, they think it applies to them. They're running Microsoft.
Right.
They don't know what it is. We hear that all the time. I need to get Microsoft. Microsoft what?
Yeah. Right.
Probably Microsoft Office is what they meant. But yeah, you're not running Microsoft Windows. You don't have Windows viruses. You don't have Mac viruses. It's a fake tech support.
Right. It's a fake call.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Skip from West Henrietta, New York. What's up?
Hello there. I got some disk problems.
Yeah.
I've got a Windows 7 computer, and there's two hard drives in there, one of which isn't working at the moment, which is one of my questions. But the main one, I've got a 5-terabyte network drive, and I can upload stuff to it, but I can't really do anything with it once it's there, and I have a funny feeling I got to put some permission in or something.
Yeah, so you can write to it, but you can't read from it?
I can read, I think, here, but it's just I can't erase anything. I can't update anything.
That is definitely a permissions problem. So here's the deal. When you have a drive of any sort, you have a set of permissions, things you are allowed to do on that drive or that folder or to that particular file, however the permissions are set up. And with those include being able to read it, write to it, erase it, change it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What you've clearly got is the ability to write to the drive so you can save new files, but you don't have the ability to make any changes to a file that's already there.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you were to copy one of those files to your hard drive, I'm sure you could open it up and edit it and change it and do whatever you want and save it back to your hard drive, but then you couldn't move it back to the network drive unless you also change the name.
What brand network drive is it?
Unsure. Upstairs, here.
Yeah, what you're going to have to do is check the manual and create a username on that drive. And then when you log into the drive with a username, that name has permissions to read and write the files. What may be happening is you're only going in as guest because you haven't created a username, and guests have very limited permission.
Now, be aware that once you create a username, that username is separate from the files under guest. So your best bet would be to copy all those files to your hard drive or a thumb drive or whatever, create your own identity and log into the drive with that. And again, the manual will tell you how to do that. And then upload all those files again, but to your own section. So for example, I have a multi-terabyte drive on the network in my home. I have a section. My wife has a section. She can't see my stuff. I can't see her stuff. And it would be the same way here. If you've uploaded stuff as guest, you won't see it once you log in as yourself.
Yeah, I use this as a backup, so I can erase everything in here, really. And
perfect.
Yeah. Yep.
If that's what you need to do, then perfect. But the idea is read the manual and figure out how to, A, create a user on the system, and then, B, log in as that user.
Yeah, one of the tricks is if you make the username on that network drive the same as the username for Windows and the password the same, then it logs in easier.
Right.
That's another problem I got on this computer. most of the time it comes up and just goes right into Windows, no problem. Every once in a while, it says it wants a password. I don't know why it does once in a while because I don't remember the password. So I just hit restart, and it comes up, and usually it comes right into Windows.
Yeah, this is a Windows 7 machine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's dying. I hate to be the one to tell you that.
The drive is dying or the board is dying?
Yes.
One
probably the drive, but yes, something is dying.
It can't read the password file to auto log in.
Right, and then when you it, so it's likely to be the hard drive.
That's okay. Thank you.
Well, no, but you know what? I'm sorry, but that's we talked about this earlier today. Drives die.
Yeah.
Google has a thing. They have billions, and that's true. Billions with a B drives. And they have empirical evidence that the average lifetime of a hard drive is 5 years.
About now, 20% per year failure rate.
Right. And what that means is some of them die out of the box, some of them last 10 years, but the average lifetime is 5 years. So if your drive is creeping up on or has gone over 5 years of age, you're in the average.
So, yeah, I just don't want to go to Windows 10, and I'm not sure what I've got. Hopefully games and stuff will run on your Chromebook, so maybe I got to do...
Well, it depends on the game. It doesn't do Flash, but it does do a bunch of other stuff. Most companies are abandoning Flash fairly quickly. Everybody but Zynga, it seems, is abandoning Flash. And so, depending on the game you play, you may easily be able to manage doing it on a Chromebook. But the idea here is please make sure that your backups are all good and accessible. You know, if you're logging in as guest, I don't know what happens when you put that on another machine. So,
I have drive and my system driver both kind of mucky on me, so I better get something going here.
Yeah, you better, and the faster the better. The good news is a lot of deals for Christmas.
Okay. You got other phone calls waiting for you?
We do. Well,
I'll leave my other questions for another day then.
All right, thanks. Good luck. Okay. Get that taken care of right away. Don't wait.
Yeah, so often we hear from someone whose drive has died. Yeah, it's been acting funny for 6 months. Or it's been making a weird noise for a couple of months now. All right, so invent a time machine.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Go back in time and back it up then, because that was an indication that something's going wrong. It's like your car or appliances, toaster, refrigerator. If they start making a different noise, look at it. There's something going wrong.
Well, but mechanics are the same thing. Well, the light's only been on for about 6 months, so I didn't really worry about it. All right, back to the phones. Yeah. We got a couple minutes to talk to Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I thought the first part of your show was absolutely great.
Thank you.
I was not aware that Spectrum had increased their speed, and I have a 60 megabit modem. So I went in and checked, and the speed had actually increased. So I went to this ATT site and just checked it to see what it looked like. It says I have 116 megabits download, nice, but only 0.09 megabits upload.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are seeing that. Again, as Steve said, if you unplug the modem, turn it right off, let it sit for a minute or so, and then pop it back on again, you know, plug it all in, turn it back on again. Theoretically, that resets everything, and both sides should work fine.
So I did unplug it. I listened to what you guys said. I did unplug it just to make sure. It's still down here in the mud in terms of upload speed.
Yeah,
I'll turn it off again and try it again.
Well, yeah, but if that doesn't work, of course, then you have to talk to Time Warner. They may have to do something at their end.
Okay.
And it is the up speed increases are rolling out across the service area. So not everyone may have it yet. From what Phil has found, their statement says by the end of the year. So probably in your December bill, maybe your January bill, it will tell you about these changes.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So up download seems certainly faster than what I originally purchased, but upload seems to be slower than it ought to be.
Yeah.
And just a note, I called you last week about AppleScript. I think I almost have it working. I'm getting pretty hooked on this now.
So there you go.
No telling where I'm going.
Nice.
Okay, thank you, guys. Just wanted to let you know you helped me a lot with AppleScript. I did download the PDF version of the book that Dave talked about, and so I'm writing, doing my own thing now.
That's what we love to hear, Larry.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Steve talked last week about the fact that archive.org mm-hmm. has a bunch of books on AppleScript.
Yep. Which is a scripting language for the Mac to let you automate things. A lot of it's been taken over by a program called Automator, which can automate repetitive tasks. If you ever stop to think to yourself, there's got to be an easier way to do this same thing over and over again, you're usually right, there is. And with Mac, you've got Automator and AppleScript. Windows, there's terminal commands.
Well, and PowerShell.
And PowerShell, yeah. And with
Linux, of course, you got the Bash shell.
The Bash shell, which is all
Python
in there on the Mac, too, yeah.
Perl and...
What, Python, Ruby, Perl, PHP.
Pretty much everything.
The Mac comes with a dozen programming languages that no one right. knows about because they're right. all underneath at the Unix level.
Right. If you're the sort of... I remember the day you brought in the first...
Yep, Tony.
Tony Placilla was on the show with us. We pushed Steve. I was trying to show us all the wonderful new things in the Finder.
Yep.
And we just pushed him out of the way and said, where's the terminal?
Yep. But then he was disappointed it was Bash. He liked Bourne better,
wasn't it? He liked Bourne Shell better. But it was
I think they're both in there.
They're all in there. It's just Unix is all it is. So, and there's a lot of stuff under the hood in an Apple machine, just like there is in a Linux machine. They're both predicated on Unix. So there's lots of stuff under there that you can make use of, once you know it's there,
yep.
and B, once you learn the language. I don't know if there's the graphical hooks in Python and Perl to actually run graphical looking programs.
It might be.
Might be.
Yeah. At the Sider meeting this week, we were talking about emulators. Rick Harrison gave a great demo on some Apple II emulators and pulled out the old programs he wrote in the 90s, and they work fine. And archive.org has a lot of them too.
Yep.
And I was showing off VirtualBox, and so I launched a VirtualBox and launched my Ubuntu image, and the irony of running Ubuntu Unix or Linux in a VirtualBox on a Mac, which is running BSD Unix.
Right.
So then I brought up the terminal. So somebody mentioned that. Isn't that just Unix? Yeah, I brought up the terminal. Here you go. Here's BSD if you want.
Right. All right. We're done for this hour, but fear not. Despair not, for we have another hour of this nonsense coming along. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Steve. With Steve Ray, with Michael Oden, who's doing an amazing job, me, Nick Francesco, who's doing a job, and you will be, it's 59 minutes after the hour, you're continuing to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites, right here in the truly great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
Did it again.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We don't have anybody on the line. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Keyloggers are nasty programs that keep track of everything you type on a computer. It's one way someone could spy on everything you do and how hackers could steal your login credentials for various online services. In short, nobody wants keyloggers on their computers. That's why you have to act fast and remove the dormant keylogger that's currently sleeping peacefully inside your HP laptop. HP acknowledged the issue and released a quick fix after researcher Michael Ming found the security issue and made contact with HP about it. Someone asked Ming whether he could figure out how to control the HP laptop's keyboard backlight, and that's how he discovered the keylogger. The program is not spying on you presently, and unless someone activated it, it comes pre-installed on more than 460 HP machines. And it's deactivated by default, and yes, it looks very much like a built-in way of spying on people. However, HP did fix this issue rather quickly, according to Ming's blog post on the matter. I tried to find HP laptop for rent and asked a few communities about that, but got almost no replies, he said. One day I even thought that I am a thief trying to rob someone, so I messaged HP about the finding. They replied terrifically fast, confirmed the presence of the keylogger, which was actually a debug tracer, and released an update that removes the trace. HP computer owners out there probably will want to check out HP's support document and apply the patch that removes the keylogger.
Technically, it's only on machines that have a touchpad, a Synaptics touchpad, but if you have any HP at all, run this just in case.
Right, so do you own an HP laptop?
Yes.
Yes?
Two.
Well, and you know what to do. And for everybody else, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, we're going to talk to Barb from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Barb. What's up?
Hi. I finally went from a Windows 8 to a MacBook Air the other day.
Nice.
And so far we're loving it, but I'm trying to transfer some files from, it's an HP laptop, and I just hear it's one of the Stream notebooks running 8. Stop laughing, please.
Yeah, no problem.
And I cannot download Migration Assistant. The MacBook keeps telling me I'm not running the most updated version, and I don't know how else to do that.
Well, you start with under the Apple menu and go to App Store, and from there go to Updates, and that will install the latest updates for the computer.
Okay, so on my HP, I would do that then.
No, on the Apple,
or the MacBook is telling me that I'm not running the most upgraded version, but I just downloaded it.
Well, it doesn't mean I don't know that it means the latest version of the Migration Assistant. It means the latest version of the operating system.
Probably.
Okay. And I'm thinking this does not have enough space, possibly, to download the most upgraded version of Windows. That's my problem.
No, hold on. We're really talking about two very different things. Let's take one machine at a time.
Okay.
Let's start with the MacBook Air.
Yep.
Okay. Under the Apple menu, select App Store.
Right, got that.
Then go to Updates and see if there are any and do them.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's one.
Okay.
Then on the Windows machine, then you download that Migration Assistant.
Which I did already.
No. First, upgrade the Mac.
Okay, upgrade the Mac first. And then, okay. Gotcha.
Right. Then download the Windows Migration Assistant on Windows.
Okay.
And connect the two. You should. I believe the error message you're getting.
Okay.
And are you getting that message on the Mac or on?
On the Mac.
On the Mac, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So upgrade the Mac first.
Which I just did. It said no updates available.
Maybe it needs an upgrade. Go to the Apple menu and choose About This Mac, and it will tell you what system version you're running.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Under the Apple menu, the first command is About This Mac.
About This Mac, I don't even see it. I'm down in the Apple icon down at the bottom. You mean there? The App Store?
No, the Apple menu that looks like a little apple in the upper left corner.
Oh, gotcha. The little apple up here, About This Mac. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I need to, need to know, software update?
Well,
click on that.
What system version does it say you're running?
Oops, I just clicked out of it. It still says it's not. All right, let me try it again About This Mac. I am running Version 10.12.6.
You may be getting an erroneous message. I'm looking at the specs for Migration Assistant, and it says it runs through 10.11. So maybe it's seeing 10.12 and saying that's the wrong version. No, but it should work.
Yeah, it should work.
It should work.
So if you go up to that little Apple menu in the corner and pull down App Store.
And the software update button in that About window takes you to the same place.
Same place. Yeah. Okay.
So there is an upgrade available, 10.13, but I don't think it needs that. It should work with 10.12.
Okay.
And what, is it when you launch the Migration Assistant on the Mac, you get the message?
Yes.
That's strange.
It's got to be the HP. I know it is.
Well, the HP needs to have
problems with it than not.
The HP needs to have Windows XP Service Pack 3 or later, so that you should have at least that. So, how many files are you trying to transfer?
Oh, it's not many at all. Oh, I don't have a clue how many, but I don't have much on this computer at all.
That might be easier to copy the files to a flash drive on the HP and then put that flash drive into the Mac.
And then the Mac will automatically recognize it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I have a flash drive. And then what I want to do is just get rid of everything on this HP and then try to sell it. I want to just, get rid of everything. So, okay. All right, then that's what I will do. I'll copy to a flash drive. Okay.
Good luck. Right.
Yep.
Thanks,
Thank
Barb.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Migration Assistant will copy everything, all of your documents, all your photos, all your music. It'll copy your email settings, your username, account, everything. If you've only got a few files you want to copy, then it's often easier to use a flash drive.
That's over. Right, it's overkill to run the Migration Assistant for a bunch of files that aren't going to go over anyway. I mean, because they don't exist.
Yeah.
But if you've only got a few files and you know which ones they are and et cetera, and you check that you've moved them and that they all open.
Yep.
Then there's no reason not to do it that way. And as we said, I want to take just a minute to reiterate something I said at the top of the show. We were talking about gifts for people for Christmas. And one of the things that you should give is the gift of backup. If you want to buy them a flash drive, that would be great. If you want to give them a year of Carbonite, that's only $60. That's even better. The same with the, what was the other program?
Backblaze.
Giving someone an automated backup is a beautiful thing. But anything that you can manage to do to help them back up is a good thing.
We had a customer this week that said, I've got a backup, and we looked at it, and it was 3 years old. So that may not be a... So we have to change our wording. Do you have a current backup of your data?
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Webster, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, it'll depend on what same answer I get.
Sure.
I have issues with my computer. It was starting to die out, and I took it to a guy, and he downloaded some of my files, and when I tried to access them through the thumb drive, the files came up with a $EFS file, and I can't for the life of me figure out how to open these. Can you recommend a site or a direction?
Well, that says it's the Windows encryption file system. Was your old computer running an encrypted hard drive?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. This is weird. You need to talk to that person and find out how they backed things up, because Steve is right. EFS is the encrypted file system. And, what that does is it protects all of your data from somebody just randomly breaking into your machine and grabbing it, because they have to have certain passwords and et cetera, et cetera. So if you've got an EFS file, then it is encrypted and you need the password.
Oh, okay.
So you, and I'm sorry, I wish we could help you, but whoever backed things up for you, I don't even know how you back up into an encrypted file without doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe they just encrypted the file system on the flash drive.
That may be, but you need, I'm afraid you're going to need to talk to them to find out just what the heck actually happened there. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, it's the kind of time I've been having with this thing. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a yep. good holiday.
You too. Thanks. Yeah, unfortunately, we see that every once in a while somebody does something that's probably good. I mean, backing them up and encrypting them means that they're not, you know, even if you lose the flash drives, people can't get at them. But if he didn't give you the number, the password, that's probably not a good thing. So,
or he backed up the wrong files.
Right, right, right.
I hate customer stories. We had a customer who was religiously backing up his Quicken data file onto CD for years. And when he gave us his hard drive died, he bought a new computer. He gave us stacks of CDs. We look at the CD, and he backed up the shortcut to the application. Didn't back up his data file. Backed up the shortcut to the application.
Right.
So we went back disk after disk after. Yep, sorry, you copied the wrong file.
There they all are.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. All right. So that's what we tell people. It's not just backing up. It's verifying that backup.
Yeah.
So it's not, do you have a backup? Do you have a and of course, do you have a recent verified backup?
Yeah.
Now, to us, when you say backup, you imply recent verified. Yep. That's the way it works. But for most people, you have to spell that out. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hello, fellas. Number one, I'd like to thank you for the tremendous advice on buying a Chromebook, and I'm looking right now at your Guru's Guide to Chromebook for Seniors, which is so excellent.
Thank you.
But I do have a question in regards to what Steve said earlier. I know a lot of older folks are complaining their Time Warner bill is $160 a month, and he mentioned he got his bill down 50 and particularly in regards to the internet. And I was wondering if he could tell us how to do that.
Sure. It's one of the services our company offers. Bring your Time Warner bill into us at our store, and we can take a look at it and find things. There's a couple of things that are notorious for happening. One is getting charged for equipment you don't have anymore. So say you have a problem with your cable box, you get another one, and they forget to take the old one off your bill, so now there's two on your bill. We had one customer that had 9 DVRs on her account for her one-room apartment and a $300 bill that she was complaining about. So make sure that you're only paying for the equipment you actually have. Check for the digital adapter boxes if you don't have TVs that need them, although that's going to change soon. And many times when you sign up for the service, they throw in a bunch of channels. You know, you get HBO free for 6 months or Showtime free for 6 months, and then they start charging you for it. And so you can check to see if you're getting any of those extra channels that you don't need anymore. So basically, it's looking through the bill, the line item bill, which is page 2, you know, not just the summary on page 1, and see if there's things on there you don't need anymore. Now, if she doesn't do a lot of internet, then maybe she could cut down on her internet speeds. You know, you don't need the 50 gigabit, you know, cut down to the 20. And that also, is she on Time Warner or is she on Spectrum? And some of the Spectrum deals are better than some of the Time Warner deals were. And so that can be a big thing, too.
How do you get from Time Warner to Spectrum?
You have to call them and switch services. Ask them what the price would be if you switched to Spectrum services. You get different television packages. You get different internet speeds. You get much faster internet speeds. 60 is their minimum on Spectrum. And also don't mind playing the elderly, you know, woman on a fixed income. And see if there's a deal they can give you for that. The deal they offer on their website is $98 for phone, internet, and television. The three triple play. And generally that's only for new customers, so us existing customers get screwed that way. But oftentimes you can get down into that close to that area. one thing that they do tell you, we had a couple of customers that I was at this week, if you cancel your phone service, your price can go up because the triple play bundle can be cheaper than doing just internet service. And so, you know, the thing there is you get a Time Warner telephone, you just ignore it. You get a landline you never use.
Right.
Because your bill is lower. So that's a big thing. But we see a lot of the most common things are equipment you don't have anymore or channels you don't need anymore. We had one customer was paying for all 10 of the pay channels because occasionally he'd watch a movie here and occasionally he'd watch a movie there. So for that, you know, get an Apple TV or a Roku and you do them on demand instead of paying a monthly charge for services like that.
Steve, if I got a Roku and just went with pure internet, is that significantly cheaper?
It can be, yes. And there are a new class of internet-only television packages. Sling TV has a package of the common television channels that come over the internet. Amazon now has Amazon Channels, which you get over the internet. And then Roku and the Amazon Fire and Apple TV, they have different channels packages as well. One of the things that you tend to have to change your mindset is you start having to learn networks. So, you know, what network is your show on, and that's the app you download on your Roku or your Apple TV. Now, I know Nick liked his Roku for all the Kung Fu channels.
Exactly.
We've got El Rey now on television.
Yeah, we have El Rey.
So El Rey has got a lot of those channels.
But is there a way to get a reasonable price just for internet from either Spectrum or Time Warner?
Depends on how you define reasonable. I know that Spectrum has been offering or running television ads. It's $45 a month for internet service. So if you don't need the extra television packages or the phone packages, you can do it that way.
Of course, what we don't know is what's going to happen now that net neutrality is gone.
Yeah, when are there deals going to change?
And, you know, will they charge you extra to get to Netflix?
Yeah. Spectrum has, on their website, they have list of the different packages. If you're using, you know, television, internet, and phone, by bundling more together, you save money than buying them separately. But if you want internet only, you can get just internet only.
So essentially, do you have to cancel Time Warner if you have that and then buy Spectrum separately?
Basically, yes. But it's the same company now. So when Charter bought Time Warner, they called the new company, the combined company, Spectrum. Mm-hmm. So you're switching from the old Time Warner package to the new Charter package under the Spectrum brand.
And, you know, when I meet these elderly folks at McDonald's for coffee, can I tell them bring their bills in and see you? And can you tell us where your business is?
Sure.
Yeah, it's Mac Ave. We're at 7716 Victor Menden Road in Victor. We're there till 5 today. Hi, Jackie. through the week, we're open 10 to 6. And we're on Route 251 just off of 96 between Eastview Mall and the Village of Victor.
Perfect.
And we sell replacement cable modems. That's a big thing, too, with Time Warner. You rent your cable modem for $10 a month and your Wi-Fi for $5 a month, so you can buy your own and save money that way.
Right. Well, you've been sensational. Thank you so much, and have a happy holiday, you fellas.
You too.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks again. Bye.
All right. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bob.
Some of the incidental charges are very annoying. You know, you pay $3 a month for a sports package, even if you don't have sports. For ESPN on standard cable, you have to pay extra for that.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 24 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Loden.
And at 27 minutes after the hour, we have Joe from Parma, New York on the line. What's up, Joe?
Yes, hi there, fellas. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all.
You too.
Okay, thanks. I recently went through a Windows 10 upgrade. It was brought me to the Creator Edition, and I can no longer open up Word or Excel without going through the configuration every time it opens. And I went online and tried to find a solution better than going into the registry, and I've always, I think, learned don't touch the registry unless you're an experienced person, and I'm not. So I was wondering what might get me back to opening them without the configuration running each time.
Well, the answer is you go into the registry, but you don't have to do that yourself. You can take it to a reputable dealer and have them do it for you. And that will cost you money, but shouldn't cost you a lot of money because it's a known fix and it's a known set of steps and et cetera, et cetera. So
what version of Office is it?
Office 2007.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a bug. Well, it's a bug in 2007 being not compatible with the 2017 version of Windows.
I see. Well, I certainly agree taking it to a dealer is where I'm going to go, but I just wanted to see if there was a simple solution, and obviously there's a simple one if I go to a dealer and I'm fine with it.
Well,
or
yes.
Upgrade to a later version of Office.
Right.
Or switch to one of the free Office suites like Google Docs or LibreOffice.
Yeah, I think you're right. I will certainly consider all that.
Okie doke, Joe.
Oh, here's a... no, I'm sorry.
All right, thanks.
Yep. I say, here's a simple fix. Go to the run command. Oh, and change registry entries. No, no.
Yeah, right.
It's a simple fix. Go to the run command. So if you mistype one little character on there...
That's right.
You're screwed.
Well, Microsoft has done... I've ranted about the registry often enough. I guess I don't need to do it again. It's just a joke. But we're going to go back to the phones, and now we're going to talk to Mark. From Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hello, hello. Question about Cobian backup.
Yeah.
I told you last week I was using it, and I do love it, but I have a couple head-scratchers. Maybe I don't understand how it works. I tried the incremental backup for, like, a while.
Yeah.
And it just kept filling up the hard drive till it couldn't use it anymore. Then I tried the other backup, which was...
Differential.
Differential, same thing. Now that I do a full backup every, like, 3 days, I have it scheduled, like, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, you know, at night. And that's working well. But the thing is like, I went in and I replaced some music files this week with more current versions. I had some... I had old versions of like one band, and I decided to update it to a new version. And when it backed up the new version, but it also keeps the old files there at the same time.
Right. All of the things that you're talking about are configurable.
Right.
So somewhere in the and I can't lead you to it because I just don't have Cobian in front of me. But
right.
Somewhere in the configurations, you can set it to. Keep old files, delete old files, keep X number of versions, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Now, for everyone else so that they're caught up, a differential backup backs up only the files that have changed since the last full backup.
Right.
An incremental backup also backs up only changed data, but they only back up the data that changed since the last incremental backup.
Right. So what would happen is every time I did one of those, it would back up all the files I said to back up, but 99% of them would be empty.
Right. So that makes the restore faster. So because you only restore from one backup.
Right.
When you do incremental, it restores the full, and then each incremental has to be restored in sequence
to
get back.
A differential has to restore two files, the full backup and the last differential.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you keep all those differentials, then, yes, you're going to fill up your hard drive fairly quickly.
Right.
Which, there's no perfect solution because you just need space for backups. That's simply a fact. But, whichever one you pick, make sure you've set up the configurator so that it overwrites old files as opposed to making a version. You can version your data. So you can always say, you know what, I don't like this version. I like the one two versions ago.
Okay. Do you think there's anything on your website that explains how to set those up?
With the manual.
Okay.
And they do have a manual online that you can read. So.
And there's a support form where you can ask questions.
Right. Okay. So I'm afraid you're going to have to do it that way. But you can set it up to be exactly what you want. You just have to know how to do that setup.
Right. Okay. Well, I will investigate.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we do know that when you're looking at something as complex and as very important as backup, it's never a bad idea to actually read the manual. I hate to say it, but that's probably the thing to do.
And for average people, you just want to back up everything.
That's true.
But that may mean you replace. So when your backup drive gets full, most of the programs will delete the oldest backup. So what we recommend is your backup drive should be at least twice as big as your main drive. So you can keep all those old backups. So, yeah, you may not know when the change happened that you need to get back to. Was it 2 weeks ago? Oh, it's in my backup. Or was it 6 months ago that got aged out?
Right. Right. So you need to be very careful about how you design your backups and how you plan your backups and then set up the configuration to do the backups the way you've planned. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jay from Rochester, New York. Hi, Jay. What's up?
Hi. This is Gary from Rochester. Missed my name. What I was calling about is Mozilla Firefox. I think I have the latest edition, and I recently downloaded an update. But and Mozilla works fine if I have to go to a website that's a link in another communication.
Mm-hmm.
But if I just open it to the home page and type in something in the address bar to search, it just doesn't work. And I could spend 3 hours on the Mozilla website and try to figure it out. Or I wondered if you had a quick fix, that there's some box I need to check or uncheck.
Are you getting an error message at all when you say
no,
it doesn't work?
No, I'm not. It just doesn't function.
What happens instead?
Absolutely nothing. It just doesn't.
So you type in an address like soundbites.org.
Yeah.
You hit enter and nothing happens.
Nothing happens. But what I hit is the arrow or that right next to the on the search bar.
Right.
Nothing happens.
What if you just hit enter?
Okay, I'll try that. I've got it. I've got it open now, and I've got Microsoft.com in the address bar.
Sure.
So I'll just hit enter.
Now, they just did a major update to the new Firefox Quantum, which is supposed to be super fast.
Hmm.
Did that work?
No, it didn't. It didn't.
What do you see in the main body then?
It really, there's just no activity of any kind.
What do you see on the page?
Would you like me to describe the whole page? Or,
yes, please.
In the upper left, there's the Mozilla Firefox icon and then the usual files, the file menu, edit.
No, no, not the screen, the page. What's in the web page?
If in the place where Microsoft.com would have come up.
Yeah, there's.
Is it just white blank?
Just white blank.
It doesn't say connecting at the top?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It's strange.
What it sounds like is you've got a bad download of Firefox.
Okay.
What I might suggest you do is use a different browser.
Oh, yes, okay.
Uninstall.
First thing I would do is uninstall Firefox.
Maybe with Revo.
if you have a Revo, that would be good. And then go using, I don't care, Edge, whatever, download the Firefox again and install it. And what it sounds like is you got a bad download.
All right. That I thought of trying that. I'll try that, and if it doesn't work, I'll try to find something else or possibly call next week.
Perfect.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yep. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah. It should at least say connecting as it tries to load the page. So that's not, if it's not doing anything at all, it probably was a bad install.
Yep. And we see that sometimes. It's rare, but it happens. Bad install, bad download, that's sort of fair. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. Hi, Jerry. What's up?
Hi, guys. I didn't get the first part of your show there about the Time Warner Spectrum cable, what's going to happen after the first of the year. Something about the Time Warner customers will now have to switch to Spectrum and get these little decoder or sync, what do you call it? Decoder boxes or descrambling boxes or something.
Right. So that was one of the bad things that's happening. The good things is Spectrum Internet users are going to get faster speeds. The bad thing that's happening is the Spectrum is going to start scrambling the low channel cable numbers. So if you don't have a cable box, if your television just has a coax cable coming into it and you're watching TV, you're going to need a digital adapter box from Time Warner. They're currently renting for $5.99 a month. On each of those TVs, or you can get an antenna and go back to the olden days and watch free high definition digital broadcast from the local TV stations. We get about 25 channels among the five stations. Many stations have different channels on each station. So like WXXI has four channels, what used to be channel 13, 13.1, 2, 3, and 4, they have four channels available. So with a digital antenna, which you can get for under $50, you can get free broadcast television, or you may have to start renting the box for unscrambling the digital channels. We're expecting that's going to be, users are going to be notified in their December or January bill that this change is going to be happening.
Do you recommend any kind of brand for those digital antennas at all?
Well, we happen to sell a couple of them at our store. biggest thing is you need to have a window. Well, it's best if you have a window pointing in the direction of the transmitters, which are mostly on Pinnacle Hill. There's a website, AntennaWeb, which I can't remember. I can't type and talk at the same time. AntennaWeb.org. That will you put in your address and it tells you what direction to point your antenna. So if you have a window pointing in that direction, that's best. If you want to put an outdoor antenna in that direction, that works too. Then you can get all the high definition broadcast channels. A lot of times, what we see is people just have a TV in the bedroom. They watch the morning news on while they're getting ready. Well, you don't want to pay $6 a month for seeing the morning news. So you pay $30-$40 for an antenna and one time and there you go.
I see. This won't affect your internet, would it? I mean, for your email and things like that, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
Oh, just for your TV, cable,
just for television. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see. Well, thank you very much for the information. I really appreciate it.
Sure. All right. Thanks.
They also, at AntennaWeb, they have a cord-cutting guide as well, and they talk about different brands of antenna, too. Now, after the break, we'll talk about cable guides that you, right now, you are paying a rental to get the cable guide on your TV.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, Nina Francesco, and you. It's 41 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we've been talking a lot about cord cutting. We've been talking a lot about your cable bill and things like that. And Steve's going to put the antenna web thing up
on
online.
Our website.
And we'll see how that all works. Oh, I bet this is why right here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Blocked. So the other thing that that happens on your cable bill is you're paying a rental for the remote, and for the cable guide, so that you can see what TV shows are on. And I think the cable guide is like $3 a month. And you can use the TV Guide website or the app. There's one called TitanTV.com. I use one called TV Time, which also lets me track what TV shows I want to watch. So that becomes my DVR list, and cut down on that subscription cost for the cable guide. Now, many packages will include all these little fees. In fact, that's what they're trying to they're doing lately. They're sneaking the package cost, you know, $99, and that includes the rental for the remote, the rental for the cable box, the rental for the guide listing. But on a lot of the Time Warner bills, it will line item each one of those, and you can figure out which stuff you need and what stuff you don't want to have to pay for. But it's a little frustrating when you see that you're paying a sports package fee to have sports channels on standard cable that you may never watch.
Exactly right. It's an interesting issue, and of course, none of these companies are particularly invested in helping you save money. So that's an issue that you just have to deal with. They're going to make it hard to find much of this information. Luckily, there are other companies that are working hard to provide that information to you so that you can, in fact, cut the cord if you want to, or at the very least, deal with knowing what's out there and what you can do. And cutting the cord is scary. We've talked about this well more than one time. When people go to buy a new computer, many of them buy a Windows machine, even though they know they don't need it, because it's
familiar.
And so they
buy. That's what the salesperson says.
Right. And they buy the thing they know, so they don't have to think. And the same thing is true of television. You know, if you continue using the same package you've always had, you don't have to think. You don't have to learn anything new.
For the longest time, there was, people would just call up and say, just give me a standard television. Or basic television.
Right.
And that was, you know, $40 a month. What they didn't realize is there was one called starter television that was $10 a month.
Right.
And if you didn't ask for it, they didn't tell you about it. And so starter television was like channels 3 through 20. And for a lot of people, that's all they want. And so you can save some money by using starter, not basic.
Right. That's exactly right. And we find that that once people get used to a new way of doing things, they don't mind it. Mm-hmm. It becomes familiar.
Right.
It's like I've always said, it's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive. You just don't know where the radio is. And it takes a couple of days to learn the radio. It takes a couple of weeks to figure out all the controls.
Besides the gas cap fill on.
Right. All of that stuff. But once you get it, you don't worry about it anymore. And we understand that when we buy a new car, and we sort of understand that when we buy a new computer, because whenever you buy a new laptop, the first thing you do is you spend about a week doing this, looking on one side and then the other to figure out where things plug in.
And that's the big resistance moving to Windows 10 for a lot of people, is it looks different.
It looks different, and it isn't different, but it looks different. Or moving from Windows to a Mac. Well, I don't know how to use a Mac. Yeah, you do. You do. You just don't know you do. Moving to Linux. I know it's free, and I could save an awful lot of money and do all the things I do now, but I might have to do them a little differently, and so I think I can't move. Okay.
Yeah, we always joke that the Windows copied the Macintosh, so you do know how to use a Mac. In fact, they copied it so well, there were lawsuits about it.
Right. Right.
But the one thing that we notice is that everything's opposite. So on the Apple, your Apple menu is at the top, and on Windows, it's at the Windows menu is at the bottom. And on the Apple, your My Computer's on the right, and on Windows, it's on the left. So everything is on the opposite sides of the screen, which Microsoft tried to do to avoid getting sued.
And by the way, that happens in programming. Back in the day, I was, and I'll deny this if you ever say it, I was a Mac programmer. And the company I was working for sent a bunch of us to learn how to program under Windows when Windows was first coming out.
Yeah.
And about 4 minutes into the thing, we sat there and said, oh, okay, this command is that command,
yep.
And they switched the parameters. This command is that command, and they switched the parameters. By the time we were done, we just had a list of X equals Y, yep. And all the way down, ditto, 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 for switch the parameters. It was exactly the same.
There used to be a book, Windows Mac Translation. You know, control panel is system preferences. You know?
Right.
Wastebasket is trash. And I haven't seen one of those in a while.
Right. But that's exactly how that worked. And it makes a lot of sense when you realize that the paradigms that people use are fairly similar all the way around. And it's a matter of a few minutes learning. That's why I say it's like getting a new car. You do still know how to drive. You know how to click a mouse. You know that you want to start an operating system. You know you want to start a word processor. You know you want to start a web browser. And it's just knowing where you go to start that web browser. You know you want to turn on the ignition. Well, where's the key on this model? You know you want to play the radio. Well, where is the radio on this model? You know you want more heat. Well, where is the heat?
Well, now there's new cars that don't even have a keyhole. There's a start button.
Exactly.
And you have to have the key in your pocket. And heaven forbid you leave the key, you know, at home and drive away, because it's usually a proximity sensor. So the key is close enough in your garage to back out. But then by the time you get to the end of the driveway, your car dies because you're too far away from the key, and the car thinks it got stolen.
That's actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
I like that, actually. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Marion from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Marion?
Hi. I just wonder if you could tell me. I see when looking at the Chromebooks, some are Celeron and some are Intel.
Yeah.
And what is the difference in which is the best?
Well, best is a relative term, but Celerons are
cheaper,
and therefore lower end CPUs.
Okay.
The Intel, they're all Intel. Okay, but the Celerons are a lower end, less expensive, slower, less capable version of the i3 or the i5 or the i7.
Okay. Now, what would be equal to an i5 or an i7 in the Intel? Do they tell you that?
Yeah. You mean in the Celeron?
No, not the Celeron. Now we're talking about Intel. You said that's a better one.
Right, the Intel i3 and i5 are better than the Intel Celeron.
Okay.
More powerful.
Okay, and so if you do a lot of searching on the internet, you're better off with an i5.
Nope.
How about, did you say i7 also?
Nope. Here's the thing, Marion. Those only speed up stuff happening in your computer. So if you're searching on the internet, then all of that searching happens at Google's website.
Okay.
So you could have the fastest processor, and I could have the slowest processor, and our searches would be identical.
But if you're playing games on your computer, or sometimes even on a website, or you're doing, you know, big spreadsheets on your computer, then you would want an i5.
Okay.
At least.
Or at least an i3.
Yeah. Okay.
So here's the thing. I do a lot of writing. Most of that happens in my computer, so I like having an i3 or an i5. I do a lot of big spreadsheets. Those happen in my computer. I prefer an i3 to an i5. But if I'm doing email, that's all happening at Gmail's website. If I'm doing web surfing, that's all happening at Google's website. So it doesn't matter what processor I have. Now, what does count is how fast your internet connection is as to how fast the information can get to you once Google has compiled it.
Okay. So which one will you want the i5 then?
Well, for most people, unless you're doing big spreadsheets and big documents, uh-huh. An i3, even a Celeron, is fine.
Okay.
So an i3, if you're looking for a little more power, an i3 would be fine.
Uh-huh. Okay, and that's basically just for spreadsheets, documents, and
right.
PowerPoint things?
Right.
Okay. Now, PowerPoint, I go to an i5, because that's heavy graphics.
Right. You might, well, but the graphics chips are different.
Yeah.
Right? So an i3 or an i5, if you're doing a lot of office suite type stuff.
Uh-huh.
But if what you're doing is searching and mail and that sort of fare, a Celeron is fine. If you're playing games, an i3 or an i5.
Uh-huh.
You know, faster is always better, so an i5 would be better.
Okay. Can I ask you a price point on the i5s? Idea of what they go for?
Generally, they add $75 to $100 to the price.
Right.
Okay, so you're talking like $350-ish?
Yeah.
Okay. And any particular brand, or aren't you able to mention that?
We could mention it, but most of them are good. You know, the standard names, Toshiba, HP,
okay,
things like that are well-known names. They all make Chromebooks. Asus makes exceptionally nice Chromebooks.
How about Dell? Do they?
Dell makes Chromebooks, and they're very nice.
Okay.
You could, well, with all of them,
right,
you can get low-end as well as high-end.
Yeah,
so you
can
pick.
You can get cheaper, you can get fast.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
And then if you want to really go overboard, there's the new iMac Pro.
which starts at
$5,000, with a Xeon W processor in it and Vega 64 graphics. When they announced it last summer, they announced all this stuff it could have in it: 18 core processor, 128 gigs of RAM, a 4 terabyte SSD. And so people started looking up what this stuff would cost. A 4 terabyte SSD is $5,000 all by itself.
All by itself.
All by itself. And so people were expecting $17,000, $18,000, maybe $20,000 for a maxed out iMac. It's only $13,000.
Well, but don't forget, that's only the 10.
Well, maxed out, 18 core.
No,
with
they
everything.
Said the 18 no. cores aren't available yet.
Well, I'm not saying available. I'm saying price.
Okay.
So if you max everything out, 18 core, 128 gigs of RAM, the 4 terabyte SSD, it's only $13,200. So it's cheaper than we thought it would be.
It is cheaper.
And we have orders for 5 of them from our video clients.
Nice. All right, that's it. This music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden, who jumped in to handle the board for us. God bless you, Michael. You're okay in my book. I don't care what Dave says about you. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's going to stick around to keep him on the straight and narrow. Somebody bring this boy a beer. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You folks have a great, great, great holiday, whether you celebrate Hanukkah, Christmas, some other thing, I don't care. Just have a great one, whatever it is. And we will see you soon, in fact, in 166 hours. This is Soundbites on the Truly Great, and grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.